All right, so the first session is about the future of JavaScript and the web. And in particular, I'm going to be focusing on a couple of new standards that you might have seen around or you might have read blog posts about, but that are coming soon, and some of them are already here, ES 2015, ES 2016. And I'm going to talk about web standards themselves. So I've seen the future. It's in my browser. Honestly, like, the technologies that are coming into the browser are absolutely phenomenal. But websites need to work in places like here, and also here, even in space, and not just in San Francisco on one of these things. And really, to make an inclusive web that works on every device everywhere, so that means no matter where you are in the world, everybody's included, we need web standards to do that. So my name is Rami. I'm a technical evangelist. I'm actually based out of Montreal, so you might have seen me around, or if you're curious about some of the events that are happening locally here, feel free to reach out to me. My job is to actually work with developers, work with startups, help them build their technologies on top of our platforms and the web. So if you've got any question, you want to reach out to me about anything at all, that's my Twitter handle. That's what I look like without a beard, hence why I have a beard now. Without further ado, what's on the agenda today? We're going to talk a little bit about web standards, why we need web standards, some tools to help you follow web standards, what's new with ES 2015 and ES 2016, so some of the stuff that hasn't even been ratified yet, so this is still in draft, these are proposal stages, new features that are coming to JavaScript, and of course I'm going to show you some tools to go back in time, and you'll understand what I mean when I say that when we get to it. So if you're wondering, well, what are web standards? Why do we need these web standards to make this inclusive web that works everywhere, not just in the latest technology hubs? Well, first of all, web standards, they're formal, non-proprietary standards. These are standards, they are documents, they're written that explain and describe different aspects of the web for browsers and server vendors, so when they're implementing things, their software, it works and it works correctly and it interoperates. There are several different organizations that are involved in creating these web standards. Surprisingly, there isn't just one. Just like on the internet, there's a million different things roughly the same thing. It's the same thing with web standards. We've got organizations like the W3C, the WattWG, the Internet Engineering Task Force, ISO, ECMA, the INA, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So web standards are not fixed. All right, these are not something that we just decide once and it lasts forever. They actually evolve. And current versions are being published by these different organizations. So there is an opportunity for everybody to contribute to these standards. Give your opinion out. If you have an opinion about whether we should be writing generators in a certain way, this is an opportunity to work. There is an opportunity to work with these standards body and basically build the future of the web. So why do we need these web standards? To make this web development and to make the web itself inclusive, we need standards because they make web development easier, and they do that in a couple of ways. If you've noticed over the past couple of years, we've had a huge, huge amount of new devices, new operating systems, browsers, things that didn't exist like 6, 7, 10 years ago. And it's incredibly hard to build for the web and write one code base when there are so many different devices. It's hard if we don't have one standard that we can all follow. So a common set of standard reduces your development time and debugging. So you don't have to spend so much more time trying to deal with every single device. You focus on the standard, and you're more or less guaranteed they'll work similarly on every single device that implements that standard. The other thing is that standards make the web a better place for everyone. You get backwards compatibility with standards as well, graceful degradation. And of course, there's standards that are part of these organizations that help everybody be actually part of the web, things like accessibility standards, for example. If you're wondering, well, why should I care? Like, why is this like, I just want to make my website and I'm done with it? Well, there's something that's incredible that's been happening. JavaScript is everywhere. JavaScript, and not just JavaScript, but HTML5 in the web. You can use it to build a mobile apps. You can use it to power your IoT devices. You can use it on the web, of course, and to build desktop apps. It's pretty much everywhere. So we all really should care about the evolution of JavaScript and web standards. It's really, really important. Now, if you're wondering, okay, well, I use Grunt and Gulp, and there's so much stuff that's going on with web standards, and I don't even know what I'm going to do. Well, that's okay, because we've actually built tools to help you do that. And the first one that I'm actually sort of having on the screen right now is called Grunt Web Standards. So for those of you who are familiar with Grunt and Gulp, they are workflow tools, so you can actually, there's a plugin that you can actually use with these workflow tools that basically checks the generated HTML, CSS, and JavaScript to see if it's using the latest modern web standards. So it's really quite simple. You add it to your Grunt file, you run your Grunt task, it does a whole bunch of work, and then it finally gets to the part where it actually does the web standards, and it tells you, hey, listen, your CSS is missing a bunch of prefixes, or your HTML is not using the latest responsive web design. These are tools that are available today to help you get closer to web standards. So as I mentioned, Grunt and Gulp, they're available right now. They're up on GitHub. They check if your website is using the correct CSS prefixes, using up-to-date JavaScript libraries, responsive web design. If you're using a platform icon so that when people are pinning your websites on, say, an iOS device, they're actually getting an icon. And if you're using HTML object and embed and a whole bunch of other little rules. Now, that's not the only tool that's available for helping you build proper web standards into your HTML and CSS. There's a great tool by PostCSS. It's called AutoPrefixer. And basically, it does this. It parses your CSS. It adds all the vendor prefixes that are missing. So you don't have to do that yourself. And it uses the wonderful website Can I Use to figure out, OK, well, these are the prefixes that I need to add. So let's say, for example, you wanted to display with using the flex keyword, and you wanted to have a full screen. Well, instead of having to write and memorize and remember all of these vendor prefixes, you just write the standard version, which is this, and PostCSS will auto-prefix it and generate all of this code for you. So you don't have to worry about it yourself. So what's new with ES2015 and ES2016? First, though, what is actually this ES that I keep talking about? What is this ES? It actually stands for ECMAScript. ECMAScript is the scripting language that's standardized by ECMA International as ECMA 262. And implementations include, obviously, JavaScript, but also things like JScript and ActionScript. So it's been around for a very long time, actually. And the first standard was, the first edition of the standard was published in 1997. And we've been progressing quite slowly certain periods of the last couple of decades. And finally, now, we're actually progressing very fast on the next versions. So just last June, ECMAScript organization published the edition 6, so that's what you've known as ES6 or ES2015. And ES7 is currently a work in progress, but there is hope that it becomes ES2016. So you can see how we're moving quite quickly versus the past couple of years where things were progressing very slowly. If you're wondering, I know what this ES2015 is. Who supports it, right? Like, it's a new standard. I'm sure not all the browsers are up to date. Well, actually, if you look at the major browsers out there, whether it's Edge, Firefox, or Chrome, they're getting really close to 100% compatibility with ES6. This is a table that you can find at kangax.github.io. He's got this compatibility table that's up there. And you can take a look at what features are already implemented in different browsers. And this is, as of yesterday, we are getting very close to 100% compatibility across all of the ES6 standard. So if you're wondering, let's take a look. Let's dive right into it. One of the great changes that came with ES2015 is block scoping. So here we are. I don't know if anyone has ever experienced this. I definitely have, especially when I first started off with JavaScript. Let's say that I wanted to print a variable, okay, and I have something that's true. So let's say I created this var conf, and I set it to make web not war. I'm going to print it out. It prints out correctly. I do something. This something is true. And I'm redefining a new variable called conf, right? And I'm putting it to everything is false or for some reason. If I actually print this out, it will print everything is false. And that's correct. But if I then go ahead and print it again outside of this if statement, it actually prints everything is false and not the original conf that I had in that block. Right? So this is JavaScript prior to ES 2015. It was actually function scope. So variables were scoped to the function and not to the block that they were in, not the lexical block. So if you had a for loop, for example, it would also do the same thing. Any redefinition of a variable inside a for loop, if it was already declared, it will just overwrite it, and then everything gets weird and funky. So what? What is this nonsense? Especially if you're coming from something like Java, C Sharp, where you do have this block scoping. In JavaScript, as I mentioned, all variables are actually hoisted. So when you do have a bunch of different variables declared in different parts of a page, of a function, they're all actually taken to the top. All right, so they're hoisted. So even if I declare a var bar that has nothing to do with foo all the way at the bottom, it's actually, when it's executed, hoisted to the top. So this is also applied to variables that are even never executed. So even if a variable is not never executed, it still gets hoisted to the top. And obviously, for a long time, this has been confusing for a bunch of different developers. But there's an easy way for you to always remember this. And the way you would do that was by basically using something like JSLint and giving it the one var setting so that it would tell you, hey, listen, you should have one variable at the top of your function, the top of your scope. ES 2015, though, has introduced this new way of declaring variables with let and const. So any variables that are declared with let and const are scoped to the block statement. So this is closer and more in line with other C-like languages like Java and C++. So in situations like this, let's say that you declared foo with let, every single time that you declared foo, this guy right here, he's going to, if I'm in this if statement and I redeclare foo, it's going to print what was set in this block. And the minute I get out of this block, it will go back to the original variable right here, foo. And so there's no hoisting of variables when they're declared with let. The other really cool thing is that if you've got something declared with const, those are also scoped to the block. But these are constant variables. So if you try to change them after you set them the first time, you'll actually get like an error that happens in JavaScript, because that's not how consts work. So that's something that's really useful, especially if you're building any type of application, whether it's a game on the web and you need these variables, these enumerations of things. You can use consts to make sure that no parts of the code can actually change the value that's in that enumeration. Now, the other cool thing about ES 2015 is this new feature called destructuring. So with destructuring, it's a syntax feature. Now, it might look a little funky at first, but really what it lets you do is pattern match values to variables or properties. So let's say that you had an array. Okay, and this array, there's a new type of syntax that you could do. You can actually just say var array foo bar and abc. And if you set this equal to something, this line will actually assign bar to foo, foo to bar, I know it's a little confusing, and 3 to abc. So if I go ahead and printed foo, bar, and abc, I get bar, foo, 3. I'm just making sure that you guys are still awake. I know it's early in Montreal here. So if you wanted to do the equivalent in more pre-ES 2015, this is what you would have to do. So you can see that this is a much more compact syntax. It's a little easier. But it also opens opportunities for new things to do with the language. And among them, you can actually use the structuring to swap variables without a temporary variable. What? I promise that's the last owl in my slides. I just like owls. They're cool. So you can actually do this like you do in Python. You can swap variables without using a temp var. And it's quite straightforward. Let's say that we redo the same thing. We assign bar to foo and bar to foo. I can actually just switch the order and then destructure again. And when I go ahead and print foo bar, I'll actually print foo bar. Isn't that pretty cool? Yeah. So destructuring is a syntax feature that allows you to pattern match values to variables. But if you've taken a look at the syntax, you could also use it to name parameter positions. So this is something that's been bugging a lot of folks. Let's say that I wanted to rename this function. I wanted to pass the name x. let's say that I wanted to make sure that any object that's passed to this function g has a name key and an x value. By destructuring this, the next time I pass in any object, it will assign the 5 to x. So I can actually then go ahead and console log it. So I don't need to go through the object to get to that value. And that's all by destructuring the object itself, by pattern matching this value, the name, the 5 here, to the x here. So object destructuring is something that you could do. It's not just for arrays. Now, if you're wondering, OK, well, what if I don't destructure? What if I forget to do that? Well, luckily, destructuring is also fail soft. So if you don't assign something, it will just be given undefined, like everything else in JavaScript. But the nice thing is that you can also pass in the faults to your destructuring, which is really handy. So all this is doing is basically I just have an assignment here. Okay, and then if I do not pass anything in, okay, it's not going to take the A and attach an undefined to it. It's just literally going to have whatever was already the variable that was already set to A. So it's also sweet because you can do it with the false as well. Now, ES2015 also introduces iterators and generators. Now, this might be old news for those of you that are coming from Python or C#. But they're pretty cool when you have them in JavaScript. So the way that it works in JavaScript is that objects, well, first of all, what is an iterator? For those of you that aren't familiar, it's basically an object that knows how to access the next item in a collection. That's all it does. This object knows exactly what the next item is. So these iterators, they provide, in ES2015, they need to provide a next function that returns an object that has two properties. One, are we done? Is this the last thing? There's nothing else that's coming after. And two, the actual value itself. So to actually create an iterator, it's really straightforward. Let's say that we wanted to create a Fibonacci iterator. This is a mathematical series. The quick way to do it is we can just use symbol.operator, this new destructuring syntax, create this new function, create a let that says, hey, this is the precursor, so this is the value that we had in the past, this is the current value, return next. Next is this function that returns an object that surprisingly uses destructuring to just find the current value. Right, so you see here how we actually were able to assign the next pre and the next current in our Fibonacci series by using the structuring, which is pretty cool. So by assigning the current to is now the precursor, and the current value is actually the precursor plus the current value. So we can destructure that and then return the value itself and the done being false until we wanted to actually stop this iterator. So what's really cool with these iterators, you can also use the for of loop. This is different from the for in loop. What that lets you do is let's say that you wanted to iterate through every single next until you reach the done being equal to true. You can use the for of, so you don't have to do all that manual checks yourself. It's like a nice synthetic sugar so that you can get that running. The other cool thing about ES2015 is that we've also got generators. So generators are factories for iterators. They are functions that continue execution on next. So and they save their context for reentrances. So if you're coming from a Python, you might be already familiar with this generator syntax and the generator concept. They're introduced by this new function syntax. So you have function with a star at the end, and you use the yield to actually yield to get out until the next function is called again. So one of the neat things that you can do with generators, they can actually replace callbacks. So if you know if you've been programming in JavaScript for a while, callbacks can become quite crazy. There's going to be a huge amount of chaining of callbacks. Well, with generators, you can just not have that and just use the generators instead. So a good example of a web framework that uses generators is Koa instead of callbacks. So if you want to check it out. So this is what the syntax looks like. Let's say that we were building this function called foo. All it does is just multiplies x by the previous x, and it keeps going forever. But every single time it does that, it yields x. Okay. So the way that it would work is, let's say that I want to create this function. So I would actually just call the function, And then whatever is returned, that's this object called answer. I'm just going to call next on it, and it's going to go ahead and continue this while loop until it reaches the yield. And the yield is basically this x is going to be returned, and it's going to be set as the value. Okay, and then if the next time I call next, it's actually going to continue in this loop. So those are generators that have been introduced. ES2015 also introduced classes. Now, this is probably a shock for a lot of you because JavaScript has classes. Well, I mean, if you think about it, classes and frameworks in JavaScript have been everywhere, right? And this is something that I really like connect with. I think I've had milk that lasted longer than some JavaScript framework. I think for the history of JavaScript, every single framework that we've had, they've implemented or created this custom implementation of classes. Well, now no more, because it's part of ES2015. So this is what the syntax looks like. Fairly straightforward. You've got your class, fairly standard. We're using the extends here, so you can do some class inheritance. The constructor is right there. There's a super. That's a new keyword that lets you call the function that's in the super of that class. And of course, there's even your regular functions, but there's also get and set that you can set up as well. So if you wanted to create getters and setters. Now, this is really handy, especially if you're a React developer. Let's say that you've been using React. You've probably been using React.create class. So you see how I said every framework seems to implement its own class functionality? Well, with ES6, you can actually use the built-in class feature with React. So to do that, it's quite straightforward. You create your class. You tell it extends React.component. And there you go. That's your component. So if you're using React out there, this is an easy way to do it. Okay, now the really fun stuff, ES7. This is stuff that isn't even on the radar yet. This is like we're still in different. Each feature is sort of in a different stage in the proposal process, and some of them are really close, like our next couple of features, and some of them are we're still not sure. Maybe the syntax will completely change. Maybe it'll be completely dropped from the standard until the next one. So this one is almost, I could say that it's probably a guarantee. It's like it's really close to being in the standard. And that's an exponentiation operator. So for a long time, we haven't had this nice syntax that lets you say, hey, x to the 3 or x to the 4. We've had to use math.pow. Well, now we actually just get x to the y, or you can just write it out like the way that you would expect in other languages, which is pretty nice. It's pretty nice, I must admit. From someone who's built a lot of JavaScript games, exponentiation is surprisingly really handy. So this is nice to get a nicer syntax. So here's something that's really, really cool. Async functions and generators. So I know that if you're coming from a language like C#, or you've probably had this already for a long time, and it might be very obvious to you, but for everybody else, here's the idea. So let's say that we had a function, right? Let's say we were doing an AJAX call, okay? This might return a promise or something that says, hey, well, when we're going to get it, we're going to do something. So let's say I created this function, I get this promise, it's going to do an AJAX call. When it's done, I'm going to get a callback. So if you've been using this promise syntax, you might have attached a callback to the result of this promise, so by using the den. And then the minute that you actually call resolve is when everything gets executed. So if you've been doing that, that's awesome. You've been probably, maybe you were using jQuery promises or just promises in general. But even then, like with promises, the nice thing is that we do avoid having layers and layers of callbacks. But at the same time, okay, this doesn't still look amazing, right? It's not the cleanest syntax, right? Well, async and await actually let us get rid of these callbacks, and they're basically built on top of promises. So to say that, hey, we have a function that might be waiting for something, we say that this function is asynchronous, okay? So it gets executed, and then the rest of the code can keep working. And whenever we call a promise a promise, let's say that this some promise actually goes and does an AJAX call, we just attach await in front of it. And basically what this will do is it will just halt the execution here. Well, it won't halt execution, but it'll wait till the result gets back. And then we don't have to actually attach a callback or anything. It just gets straight returned into result, and we can print it out. Isn't that so much nicer and cleaner? It's pretty awesome, right? And this is still in draft, though, so this entire syntax might change completely. We never know. But this is something that is being currently worked on, so you can check it out online if you want. There's a bunch of other proposed features as well. There's array.prototype, .includes. This is a new function. There's rest and spread properties that are also being added for objects, which is pretty neat. Decorators, observables, simd, which is like this very like low-level way to execute multiple different calculations in your CPU. I don't know that it's a little complicated. Probably won't be that useful if you're building your regular web apps. But let's say that you were building things with ASM.js or you were doing a whole bunch of really advanced math with JavaScript, then this would be really handy for you. Observables are pretty cool, too, because they're a way for you to observe an object. So basically, like, it's building events into the language itself, which is pretty neat, especially if you've been using event-driven frameworks for a while. And decorators are useful for classes to basically attach properties to a specific function or something like that. Now, if you're wondering, well, I want this, you know, like it's like a nice cupcake, isn't it? It's like, I really want these new features. Well, what do I need to do to get them? So we actually need to go back in time, which is an interesting concept. So if you're using all these new features, if we want to make the web inclusive for everyone, not everyone's going to have the latest and greatest devices or the latest browser versions, although more and more browsers are moving to become evergreen, so they're constantly being updated. So Edge is one of them, Chrome, Firefox. But there's still some people that are stuck on older browser versions. So when we're using ES6 and ES7 features, in fact, most ES7 features are not implemented in most of the browsers out there. Some features are, but some parts are not. We still need to go back to a set standard that works everywhere, which is still ES5, which is the JavaScript that was before ES6, before ES2015. So to go back in time, we can actually use a tool called Babel. So what Babel does, it's basically a compiler. It takes your ES6 code or ES7 code and compiles it down to ES5 compatible code. So that's how we're going back in time. Now, there's other alternatives to Babel. There's Google Trusser. And if you really want to go back in time all the way to ES3, which basically means that your code runs on IE6 for whatever reason, if that's something that you want, you can actually use Continuum, okay, which is a virtual machine for ES6, but written in ES3. Pretty cool, right? Theoretically, support goes all the way back to IE6. I don't know if you can even if you even want to do that, but let's say that you did, you can. So how can we use Babel to go back in time? Well, it's quite straightforward. The first thing I'd want to do is npm install. I can save dev Babel CLI, and I can get that locally in my local npm folder. If you're not using npm, it's a great way for you to do your package manager for your front-end script, not just your node, like your node project, but also for your front-end scripts, especially if you're using Babelify or Browserify a bunch of other packaging services. So you can get all of those managed for you with all your dependencies managed with Node. Okay. So here we're actually just installing a CLI tool for Babel. Okay. And once you've got this CLI tool installed, you can actually set it up so that Babel is constantly watching your JavaScript files and it's automatically compiling. And you can do that with grunt and gulp. So you don't have to worry about, hey, do I have to manually recompile my ES6 code every single time? But let's say that you want to run it once. It's actually quite simple. All you need to do is pass it in the file. So let's say that all my files are in source. I can just pass source to the Babel command, say, hey, output all this stuff into app.js, and then set a preset. What a preset is basically a plugin that tells Babel what level of support you want. So if you just want to use ES6, ES2015 support features, you can use the presets ES2015. Now, a couple of features are probably still missing, as you've noticed in my compatibility table. Not everyone's at 100% yet of ES2015. So it's probably a good idea for you to use Babel, even if you're using the ES2015 standard, okay? Because the features that are missing in some browsers, by using Babel, Babel will at least put like a common base, okay, of ES5 that we know works on all the browsers. So you can still use the latest features, even if some browsers have them supported and some of them don't. Now, what's really cool about Babel is that it also has presets for things like ES7. So if you want to try out what async generators are and async functions, you can actually set it up so that you use the most experimental parts of the upcoming standards, and Babel will actually let you do that syntax and will compile it down to ES5. If you're using React, for example, Babel is a great way for you to basically compile your JSX files into ES5 and make it run on all the browsers. Now, of course, we do want to go back to the future, right? We do want to use some of our latest stuff. So let's say that we already have ES5 code, and we want to use ES6. We want to migrate all that stuff to ES6. So there's a couple of tools that you can actually use to do that. One is called X2Six. This is a technique that actually modifies your source files. So in other words, you're taking JavaScript, and then it's looking for patterns that it knows we can use in ES6. It'll actually change your code and output to ES6 code. But let's say that we don't want to change our code. We want to keep our ES5 project, okay? Keep our JavaScript project. But we do want to use some of those new ES6 features. You can actually use ES6 shim, which basically adds in support for different parts of ES6, and you could use that from ES5. So let's say that you wanted to use some of the features, or one specific feature with this shim, it will add it in, and then you could just keep programming ES5, no problem whatsoever. If you wanted to use the new module loader in ES6, something that I didn't cover today, you can actually also use that tool as well, the library, actually, and it will add module loader support. So what did we learn? We learned why we need web standards. So these are standards that make web development easier, standards that make the web a better place for everyone. Showed you some tools to help you follow web standards. Okay, so these are the Grunt and Gulp web standards that plugins that I had running earlier. Showed you what's new in ES 2015, ES 2016, so that things like block scoping, iterators, generators, classes, exponentiation operators, async, await, a bunch of other features, and of course, how to use Babel and other tools to bring ES6 today or to go back in time or go forward in time. And essentially, the future is going to be pretty awesome. Thank you very much. Questions.